Hey Swifties, welcome to a brand new episode of Swiftie School, where together we walk Clown Ilya Street covering the latest news and Easter eggs from our fearless leader, Taylor Swift. I'm your host, Reagan Bailey, and it is enchanting to have you here. Now that we're out of the woods, let's get into today's episode.
It's another great day to be alive at the same time as Taylor Swift. Hello, everyone. Merry Swiftmas. How are we doing? How are we feeling? I am in my era's crew neck. So many of you guys have been getting your merch, and I am so excited to see you wear them. Hopefully you find them equally as comfortable as me. I feel like I've had to rein in a little bit as to how often I've been wearing my merch because, number one, not trying to be choogy, but number two... I also need to expand my wardrobe. I've got my super cute Eras Tour adorable cup from No White Space Stickers. If you're joining me on YouTube, hello there. I look a little bit like SpongeBob right now because, as you guys know, I just cut my hair not too long ago and it's giving a little bit of a bob, and I straightened it for the first time right before filming this because I wanted to look presentable for all of you, and I'm going to dinner with my brother, and it's giving SpongeBob with the headphones, but that's fine. All is well. All's well that ends well. And I'm not in a new hell. Oh, gosh. Well, you guys double cross the line because welcome to a new episode. I am very excited and I feel like I need to stop rambling because we have a lot to cover. Now, this is a very, very highly requested episode. I am going to be recapping all of the eras, the more early eras, I should say. We're going to chat a little bit about Vault Tracks. We're also going to talk, drumroll, please. We are going to talk about her love interests and the age that Taylor was during all of these different eras. We're going to talk about me and my life during these eras, and more importantly, what was going on in the world during each of these time periods. Now, I had so much fun doing the research for this, but I have to give a shout out to one of the listeners, Floris. Hello, Floris. If you are listening, Floris T sent in a note. And if you're curious as to how to send in a note or a topic request, just head to the link in the description. You can also go to my bio on Instagram. You can go to the Swiftie School Instagram. Million places to find it. And if you're still confused, just send me a message and I will send you the link. But Floris T said, quote, as a 14-year-old Swiftie, I did not experience the eras as they really were. Can you make an episode about how it was being a Swiftie in every single era? Floris, you got it. Coming right up. I thought this would be the perfect way to end the year. I know so many of you guys have asked just for like a little bit of a recap to go back in time. I know a lot of you guys are Gen Xers, Gen Zers. I myself am a Gen Z millennial cusp, if you will. If you're wondering how old I am, I'm 27 and I was born in 1996. So me and Taylor are 7 years apart. How did you like that math on the spot right there? So in terms of what's been going on before we get into the episode, Taylor was recently at the Chiefs game. She was wearing a super cute hand-knit beanie by a fan of all things. And then she paired it with a gray crew neck. Super fun, super cute. But I saw a couple of funny memes that were going around that are like, does Taylor not know what pants are? Like, Miss Ma'am, she does not wear pants. She's the CEO of skirts and tights. Or dresses and tights. Mostly skirts and tights. The woman loves a skirt, which I can't blame you. I love a skirt too. But anyways, we've got another Chiefs game happening to round out the year. This one is happening on Christmas Day at home in Kansas City. So I'm very curious to see if we're going to see a Travis Taylor Christmas moment. Will they opt to spend that with their own families together? I'm thinking they're going to spend it together, but I don't know if we're going to see Taylor on Christmas Day. Not totally sure. That would be super fun and super iconic. And you guys have to make sure you're a part of my broadcast channel on Instagram so we can clown together prior to the Christmas game and talk about what her outfit would be. Because I could see a lot of cute Christmas things happening. But I will save that for the broadcast channel. And one last note before we get into the episode is that make sure you head over to my Instagram for Swiftie School. It's at Swiftie School Podcast over on Instagram. Yes, I almost forgot what the handle was. Swiftie School Podcast over on Instagram. And I just did a recap. A lot of you guys had requested that I recap the Sagittarius theory. This has been swirling around everywhere. There's a lot of thoughts as to maybe we're getting an album or some sort of drop on December 21st, which is the end of Sagittarius season. So if you missed that theory or you just want a refresher, I just did a post. Well, my assistant Sarah actually did a post. Shout out Sarah if you're listening. Sarah did a wonderful job recapping my latest video where I went through all of the Sagittarius Easter eggs. But I know for me personally, I'm a visual learner and I like to see all the things. So I just posted that on Instagram. Now, without further ado, let's get into today's episode. I was trying to think of the beginning of the Eras Tour when Taylor's like, I'm going to be taking you on a little journey through the different eras of my life. Are you ready to join me or something like that? So imagine that right now as if I was saying it, but I'm going to take you guys back to debut. It is 2006. Taylor Allison Swift was 17 years old and me, myself, and I was 10 years old. I was in fifth grade. This is the pre-Instagram era, the dinosaur age, if you will. I want to set the scene for you. So just to give you a little context as we go through each era, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the time period and what was going on, especially if you guys are like Gen Xers. You obviously weren't alive during this time period, which is super wild to me. Or maybe you're a boomer. I have no idea. Whoever you are listening, we're going to go on a little journey because it's fun and why not? And I also cover like what the popular song was during the time because I always feel like just hearing the name of a song will like bring you back to a time period. So that being said, I did reference two really awesome websites. One of them was this article from Screen Rant, which I had never heard of. And the other was popculturemadness.com, which if you're really bored out of your mind and want to know what a certain time period was like, maybe the year you were born or something like that, go to popculturemadness.com. Super fun way to just take a trip down memory lane. Anyways, I digress, per usual. It is currently 2006. Taylor Swift is 17. I am in fifth grade. I am a wee little lad in elementary school. The iPod Nano just came out the year before. So you bet your bottom dollar when Taylor Swift released debut. I need to explain this for all of my Gen Xers and Gen Zers. An iPod. This is essentially a micro iPhone. And the only thing you can do on an iPod, if you have no clue what an iPod is, there was a little screen at the top. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm holding up my phone. There was a little screen at the top, and then there was a circle at the bottom. You could run your finger, like in a circle, around the circle part of the iPod to turn up the volume, change the song. It also clicked. There was a center button, and then there was like four buttons, top, bottom, left, right. You could change your song, turn it up and down, whatever it is. The iPod Nano specifically was really cool because it was like a skinnier, very slim version of the previous iPod, which was very chunky. It was very thick and very chunky. You could get the back of your iPod engraved. So it was super cool. And before that, Walkmans were really cool, which was a little bit before my time, but people would clip these Walkmans onto their pants. It was kind of like a status symbol, like you wanted to show off that you were listening to a CD. So when the iPod Nano came out, it was really popular to put it in an armband if you were taking a jog, or you could clip it onto your pants or whatever it was. So just to give you some context as to how we were indulging in the Taylor Swift album. And mind you, you could not just go on your iPod, did not have, you know, Spotify or anything. It was only Apple Music. So what you had to do, it wasn't even Apple Music. It was called iTunes. I am so sorry. That was so terrible of me. It was called iTunes and you would have to go on iTunes. iTunes still exists, but you would have to pay for every single song that you purchased. So songs were expensive. They were 99 cents each until later on they became $1.29 each, which that was where I drew the line, but that's a story for another day. So we would have to go and either you would buy the whole album for whatever the price was, it was like $12 or $14, or you could buy each individual song for 99 cents. I remember the hot item, and I'm going on a very big tangent here for the iPod Nano, but trust me, it sets the scene. I remember it was so cool and so popular to give the gift of an iTunes gift card. That was like what I got for every single occasion. It didn't matter if the Tooth Fairy was coming. I was getting an iTunes gift card because the more iTunes money you had, the more songs you could buy and the cooler you could be at school when you walked around and you were like, yeah, I'm listening to the entire album of Taylor Swift's debut. So anyways, just to set the scene, that was the time period. That was the era. I was definitely a lot younger than Taylor at the time, so I probably experienced this a lot differently than she did. But again, for context, Facebook had just opened up to people over the age of 13, so I did not have a Facebook. The song at the time that was everywhere was Irreplaceable by Beyonce. I'll give you a little snippet if you're unfamiliar. To the left, everything you own in the box to the left. In the corner, that's my stuff, yes, if I bought it, please don't touch. If you know that song, you are probably my age. Very popular song at the time. And the last little tidbit I'll give you is Twitter had just launched. I have to tell you one more song that was popular. It was Crank That Soldier Boy. It was like, you, Crank That Soldier Boy, you. And you did this little dance. Anyways, this was a very fun time period, and Taylor Swift popped out of nowhere. I remember not a lot of people knew who she was. She was cute, but like there wasn't a big way to learn about new artists like you can now very quickly. It was just if your friends told you they liked a song or you heard it on the radio. So I remember a few of her singles like Teardrops on My Guitar and Tim McGraw. Those were kind of playing everywhere. You were hearing it in the grocery store. You were hearing it on Radio Disney and on your local radio stations. And that's how I first discovered her. I remember we would take a lot of like car rides because my brother did a lot of sports and I did a lot of sports. So we were always in the car for all sorts of different things. I wouldn't say I did a lot of sports. I was a dancer and a cheerleader. So we were always in the car driving around. We took a lot of road trips. And I remember that was how I first heard Taylor Swift. And I would love for my mom to dig up some old iPods so that I could go back and see how many of the songs I actually had downloaded on my iPod. Anywho, obviously we know that this was a smashing success for Taylor. Debut spent 157 weeks on the Billboard Top 200. And I want to set the scene for you as we roll into the next few eras. Taylor basically was on a cadence of releasing a new album every 2 years. So obviously debut was in 2006. So you can kind of do the math as we move into the next eras of how old Taylor was and how old I was. So moving into Fearless, 2008, Taylor Swift was 19 years old and Reagan was 12. So cute, so fun. I was in middle school. The top song at the time was Low. And I know you guys, I don't care if you are 6 years old listening to this podcast, you have probably heard the song Low. I'll just give you a little reminder. It's the apple bottom jeans, boots with the fur song. You should look it up if you don't know that song. Iconic moment. Now, this is the first time I'm going to introduce some of the people that Taylor Swift had started to date. Joe Jonas was one of Taylor's first public love interests. And if you want to match it up with some of the Vault tracks, Joe Jonas is very closely matched up with Mr. Perfectly Fine, the Vault track, because allegedly Joe Jonas broke up with Taylor over a text message, I believe. And he seemed very perfectly fine with that behavior, which since I'm hoping he has changed, but it doesn't look like it with his recent divorce from Sophie Turner. So womp womp, we hate men. If you're a man, we love you listening. Hello. Hi. You're welcome here. We love Swifty men. I should clarify. Clearly, he was not a Swifty. Anywho, Barack Obama was president during this time. And I don't know why, whenever I was researching 2008, Usain Bolt kept coming up. He was a very iconic Olympic gold medalist, and he was clearly having a moment in 2008. So I thought I would throw that in there. Now, going back to the topic of love interests, we've got Taylor and Joe Jonas. That was around 2008. And then in 2009, we had Lucas Till. Who is Lucas Till? Probably one of the least talked about love interests on this list. We've got a few that are a little odd. But Lucas Till, you might not know at first glance, but if you are a millennial or you are a Gen X, Gen Zer looking for something to do, might I suggest to you the Hannah Montana movie? Not only is this one of the finest pieces of entertainment to ever come to fruition, the Hannah Montana movie is iconic. And little known fact is that Taylor actually wrote some of these songs for Miley Cyrus on her TV show, Hannah Montana, and the movie. One of the most notable is Crazier. I don't know if she wrote Best of Both Worlds. She definitely wrote another really popular Hannah Montana song, which if you're like, who's Hannah Montana? Hannah Montana is Miley Cyrus. The same girl who sings like, I can buy myself flowers. That's her. So anyways, Lucas Till was the main love interest in the Hannah Montana movie. And if that's still not ringing a bell for you, Lucas Till was also Taylor's love interest in the You Belong With Me music video. The one where she holds up the sign in the window. She's wearing the Junior Jewels t-shirt, all of that jazz. Now, debut was still going really strong during this time period. The singles from debut still trickled into 2008. So 2 years later, that's kind of to give you an indicator of how successful debut was. But the songs that were absolutely ingrained in my memory of this time period of Fearless have to be You Belong With Me and 15. Now, keep in mind, I was in middle school at the time, so I was 12. 15 was like the perfect song for me to sing and daydream about all of these boys that I was in love with, but clearly I wasn't going anywhere with these relationships. I did have a fling. I wouldn't call it a fling. I had a major crush on this guy. It never went anywhere. He actually rejected me, which to this day I still think about. AJ, if you're out there, I'm thinking of you. I think he's married now, so that's great. But anyways, this song, 15, especially being 12 years old when that came out, was like my anthem. But I remember being too embarrassed to sing it in the car because I didn't want my parents to think I was in love with someone, because you know how the song says, like, when you're 15 and you're in love. So I would sing it to myself in my little headphones all the time. And then obviously, You Belong With Me, I feel like, was a cultural movement. I feel like there are a few songs of Taylor's, like Shake It Off, 22, You Belong With Me, that really transcend time, and that one is absolutely one of them. Now, during this time period, Taylor also set the record for being the youngest artist to ever win the award of Album of the Year, which is pretty iconic, and you can tell like she was really growing to fame during this time, and I feel like she was definitely becoming more mainstream. But again, we're still like pre-Instagram. You would learn about artists like Taylor Swift on shows like Ellen. Like, your mom would watch Ellen and then talk about it, or you would see it on the cover of a magazine in a store, or you would go to Toys R Us and there would be like posters for sale and you would see one of people you like, or there would be commercials on Disney Channel or Nickelodeon, whatever it might be. So again, she's definitely like the hot new thing and picking up major steam, but I still wouldn't call her like majorly mainstream, if you will. But that's a perfect segue into the 2010s, the Speak Now era, where Taylor was 21 years old, woot woot, and Reagan was 14. Now, 2010 was the year that Instagram was released. I personally don't really feel like in the beginning stages of Instagram, like following celebrities was a thing. And if you guys are my age or older, definitely let me know if you have a better memory of Instagram than I do. But I just remember early days of Instagram. I mean, talk about the word chuggy. I mean, early days of Instagram, I'm not kidding. You would post a picture of like a paperclip. You would post just anything. It was like zero aesthetic, highly filtered. Not edited. Let me be clear. You were not editing your photos. Like, you weren't face tuning them and making yourself look better. Arguably, we made ourselves look worse in 2010. There was like a website called picmonkey.com where you could upload a photo that you took. So it's probably some photo you took on your MacBook on like the camera photo booth on your computer. You would take some photos with your friends at a sleepover or whatever you're doing. Take the photo, you would upload it to like these janky websites where then you would add like crazy filters to make it look like a cartoon or black and white, or that like someone like scribbled your photo, like very bizarre images. And to this day, Taylor still gets made fun of for the very famous filters that she uses. She adds like this really strange filter to a lot of her photos on Instagram. If you ever look back and look at them, like, I don't know if it's like the sepia filter or what, but anyways, to give you context, Instagram was now released, thank God. And this was also the year that the iPad launched. Not that that has anything to do with Taylor's career, but just to give you context of what was going on. Kevin Hart was also like very hot on the scene in 2010. I feel like he was really having a moment, but in terms of heartthrobs during this 2010 era, this was the year that Justin Bieber was unstoppable. This man ruled the economy, the world, politics, every single woman's heart. He was the it boy of this time period. I'm not even going to call it the year. Like, Justin Bieber really was the moment. I would do anything for that man in 2010. Still would. And I have a story time on how I met him here in LA. I wouldn't say I met him. We bumped into each other on accident. It was a whole thing. But that's a story for another day. Remind me to tell you guys that another time. But Justin Bieber was really having a moment. I would arguably say that Taylor Lautner was also having a moment, not because him and Taylor dated around this time period, but just because of Twilight and the popularity around that. And he was very cute. Like, there was a specific look of all of these it boys during like the 2010 era. It was very much Justin Bieber, Taylor Lautner, Zac Efron. It was like pretty boy was the thing. And also the hair. In 2010, I don't know what our obsession was with men's hair being like long and sideswept, but that was a moment. And these men all were doing it just right. Now, I had mentioned Taylor had dated Taylor Lautner. A couple of other people that Taylor dated during this time period. We've got Cory Monteith, which RIP, if you are younger than me, Cory Monteith was a very famous actor for his role in the TV show Glee, which was a really cool show. My mom watched it religiously. I didn't watch it too much, but the show was basically a musical. Every single episode had a different focus and they sang different songs. It was like a high school drama. It was a very good show. Very, very good show. And it was on for a very long time. And Taylor dated one of the leads of that show. His name was Cory Monteith. He has since passed away, but they dated around 2010 and they really only dated, I think, like a month other two. But more notable, we've got two other major players that come into play. And I'm going to say players because they literally were players. We've got John Mayer, happening from 2009 to 2010. And this was both of these. We've got John Mayer and we have Jake Gyllenhaal. The biggest thing I'll note about both of them that are, I don't know, impressionable is that they were both significantly older than Taylor. So when Taylor dated John Mayer, he was 32 and she was 20-ish. Obviously, we know the song Dear John came out of this era. And then when Taylor dated Jake Gyllenhaal in 2010, another big age gap, Taylor was around 20-ish years old and Jake Gyllenhaal was around 29. Barf, we don't like Jake. And if you are a baby Swiftie, a new Swiftie, whatever it is, we don't judge around here. Jake Gyllenhaal is the song that All Too Well is written about. Dear John is the song that Taylor wrote about John Mayer. Now, I have a really funny quote from you guys. I think this is from Rolling Stone magazine. It's John Mayer's response to Taylor writing the song Dear John, and I thought this was hilarious. He said, quote, "It made me feel terrible because I didn't deserve it. I'm pretty good at taking accountability now, and I never did anything to deserve that. It was a really lousy thing for her to do," end quote. He's obviously referring to the fact that she wrote the song Dear John, which Taylor has never explicitly stated that the song is about him, so I think it's just kind of funny that he's so butthurt about it. And obviously, that's where we got the iconic lyric of her referencing their age gap where she says, "Don't you think 19's too young to be played by your dark twisted games?" So anyways, okay, so to round out this 2010 era, it was obviously a hip-hopping time. We had a lot happening. Back to December was the song I remember most from this time period, and I think it's because I was like an angsty teenager, and it was a fun song to reminisce on guys that you had like been in love with in middle school or were obsessed with the year before or had a crush on and rejected you. And I think Back to December, it was just really fun to actually be like a little bit younger than Taylor, because by the time her songs came out, I felt like I was living them. And I feel like that's what so many of you guys probably relate to as well. But I think it's kind of cool too, like Flores, who sent in this topic request, I think it's fun for people who are her age, you know, these teens and tweens that are just now getting to discover Taylor and go back in time. I love how we all have kind of a different experience with her and all of these different eras. It's just really, really fun. So anyways, I digress. I also forgot to mention for you guys, if you're thinking, oh my God, this is going to be like a never-ending episode, not to fear. I'm actually only going through like Reputation era because I feel like by then we're like kind of all caught up to speed and that's like a little more current. So we're going to do a couple more eras and then I have a couple more thoughts for you guys before we round it out. So thanks for sticking with me. Hopefully you're having as much fun as I am. Now, in terms of the next era, we're moving again, 2-year time increments. We've got Red. Taylor was obviously 22 during this era because we have the song 22 that came out of it. I was in high school. I was 16 years old. Channing Tatum was like the it guy at the time and the Hunger Games had just come out. I thought it was really interesting when looking up like what was going on during the year 2012. The price of a CD was allegedly averaged at $9.99, which is so crazy to think about. 10 years later, we've like nearly doubled, more than doubled the price of a CD, which is not surprising because just to breathe air in 2023 is $100. So that's fun. But the song that was very popular that was not Taylor's during this time was Call Me Maybe by Carly Rae Jepsen, which I will also say, I listened to a really fun podcast once that talked all about Carly Rae Jepsen and how people think she's like one of the most underrated pop stars. And I have to kind of agree to a sense. I think Carly Rae Jepsen has a lot of fun songs that are like not mainstream, that are just on the albums where her popular songs came from, that a lot of Swifties would actually find pure enjoyment in. Every time I've put on her album, if I'm like stuck on what to listen to, I actually find pure enjoyment in it. So if you're in like a music rut, highly recommend checking out Carly Rae Jepsen. But on the topic of dating, this one was news to me. I had never heard this before. Apparently, Taylor dated Connor Kennedy in 2012. And I was like, that's great. Who's Connor Kennedy? Well, he's the grandson of Robert F. Kennedy. Like, what? I have never heard this before. Apparently, she bought a house near him. I don't know if that was before or after, but very interesting, very confusing. But nonetheless, we've probably never heard about this or talked much about it because it was short-lived, and that's that. I thought it was hilarious while researching this sort of era and what was going on during the Red time. A lot of the articles from back in this time period were saying like Taylor had taken a turn and that this was her new like naughty album, which is kind of hilarious to me because I don't consider the Red album to be naughty whatsoever. But I guess they were saying like she's in her early 20s and she's an adult now, so she's gotten raunchier or naughtier, which I would definitely not consider the case. But nonetheless, the songs that I feel were the most impressive fashionable during this time period, obviously 22, but We Are Never Getting Back Together. This song was so, so fun because I was in high school and it was like all those gross guys that I was like so sick and tired of. I had grown up. We were getting older, you know, I was maturing, things were getting more serious in terms of like dating people and people then like dating people other people had dated and all of that. So the song We Are Never Getting Back Together definitely was the most impressionable for me and what I remember most. And this album, of course, did win Album of the Year at the Grammys as well. Now, moving into 2014, we have 1989, which just had her big moment for her Taylor's version this year, nearly 10 years later. Taylor Swift was 24 at the time of 1989 coming out, and I was 18. So this was my first year of college. And obviously, we know the hit songs from 1989. We've got Shake It Off, Bad Blood, but I feel like 1989 specifically was where Taylor's personal life, I don't know what it was about her personal life during the 1989 era. It felt like it was really under a microscope. I don't know if that's because around 1989 coming out was when there was a lot of conversations surrounding Taylor dating Harry Styles. And I feel like Harry Styles arguably is one of the most famous people Taylor has dated. Obviously, she's the most famous in every relationship, but I feel like Harry Styles at the time and still is like equal fame level. Obviously, they were a lot younger, but when 1989 came out, she had songs on the album that we know, Blank Space, all of that, Dress, all of that, that reference Harry Styles. So I don't know if that's why this felt like this time period was heavily like looking at Taylor's love life under a microscope. But nonetheless, her and Harry dated late 2012, like kind of into early 2013. And then following that, she dated Calvin Harris. They dated for about a year. And again, like I'm not trying to speculate too deeply onto any of these. The past is the past. We're just like doing this for funsies and talking about the plot strictly. But I thought it was funny. It said that he was intimidated by her success, which I could totally see that. Following, just to round out some of Taylor's love life as we move into the Reputation era, we have Tom Hiddleston in 2016. She only dated him for like 3 months. And that was the final relationship before she dated Joe. And then we have Travis now. So in terms of what I was doing in 1989 era, I do remember, and me and my mom have conflicting memories on this. All I know is that I flew out to Los Angeles to go to the 1989 tour with Matt here. I was still in college. It was my first year of college. And I remember skipping something very important. I think it's the first day of college that I skipped. My mom thinks I skipped like the first day of cheer or dance or something in college. I'm like 99% sure it was the first day of college classes that I skipped. But nonetheless, that was like the most memorable Taylor concert that I feel like I have. I cannot recall before that going to any other tours. Maybe 1989 was my first tour. I don't know. I know that I had seen Taylor perform before then. I think we've talked about this before, but I don't think I had gone to any of her tours. Anyways, that's sort of like the early round out of Taylor's career. And then we moved into Reputation, where Taylor was 27. This was the first time that Taylor skipped her 2-year pattern. It was 2017, so obviously 3 years had gone by. I feel like this time period was so heavily focused on the feud with the Kardashians. This was the year that I actually graduated college. And I moved out here to LA, and during that same year that I moved out to LA, she did the Rep Tour. I think it was, I don't even know, maybe it was 2018, but nonetheless, I went to the Rep Tour with my cousin, had the best time, and from there, I feel like the rest is history. Even if you're 14, you probably remember the Lover era because you were 10 years old. I thought a fun way to end this episode would be to take a deeper look at all of the vault tracks that are associated with these eras. I got a question from a listener, Ashley T. Hello, hopefully you're listening, and she wanted to know what vault tracks specifically were. I thought this was a great little quote from an Elle magazine article where it basically just says the vault tracks are songs written from the time in Taylor's life where she produced the album. And as we know, they might not have been released with the original album that they're associated with, but they were later released as a vault track. So basically, they're songs that Taylor wrote that did not make the cut. It's as simple as that. I went ahead and wrote down all of the vault tracks that we have gotten thus far. I feel like there are more than I thought. And honestly, I'm going to be very honest with you guys. I feel like the vault tracks before 1989 and Speak Now TV really didn't do much for me. I feel like obviously All Too Well 10-minute version is extremely notable, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm not a huge Fearless or Red fan that they just don't speak to me. But of course, these are going to be very basic, so don't judge. But my vault tracks ranked, if I had to between like the 20-ish songs that we've got. Number one has to be All Too Well, 10-minute version. Number two coming in at Is It Over Now? And number three, Now That We Don't Talk. Absolutely obsessed. I love I Can See You and Foolish One, but I wouldn't say they're my top three. Now, to round out this conversation of Taylor's impact through the eras while wearing my Eras crew neck, I thought it would be fun to take a peek at Google Trends, which if you guys have never been to googletrends.com, highly recommend it. You can look up any single thing on the internet and see what the trends have been like. And I was kind of just curious to look up the word eras and look up the word Taylor Swift and see if there was any correlation between like Taylor's growth in her career and when they've kind of peaked. And clearly, this was kind of a dumb thing for me to research because obviously they both peaked in like 2022, 2023. But it's really cool to see like the steady growth of Taylor being researched and the word era is being researched over the past year or two. Interestingly enough, the word era actually peaked on Google searches in October of 2023, which I find fascinating. Like I feel like 1989 really did have that much hype surrounding it. And that's why people were looking up the word era. I'm not totally sure. But it peaked previously in August 2023, which I think is because of the LA shows. I think that just has to be the case. It was the end of the US leg. People were willing to do anything and everything to get out here to LA to see the final shows and hopefully the 1989 announcement. And I think that's why the word eras peaked. And then the word Taylor Swift peaked in November of 2022, which I thought was really fascinating. It peaked last year and not this year. And I think that that was when the Eras Tour was announced itself. So she was getting a lot of search during that time. Very interesting. Thought I would just share that little tidbit of information. If you guys like Taylor Swift data, I'm going to recommend this Instagram page to you guys. I think it's just called Taylor Swift Data. Let me see. Of course, I hate when you're looking for something and you can't find it. It's definitely like Taylor Swift data or something along those lines, where every single day she posts some sort of interesting graphic or pie chart related to Taylor's career. I'm going to look for it. And the next time I come across one of those posts, I will absolutely send it to you guys in my broadcast channel on Instagram, which as always is linked in the bio. And I want to call out really quickly before we round out today's episode that if you are listening on Spotify, I did enable this really cool new feature where you guys are able to interact with me underneath each episode. So there's going to be both a Q&A where you can just leave an answer to whatever question is there. Right now, the default is set to like, did you enjoy this episode? But I am planning on adding some really fun interactive questions for you guys there. And then there's also going to be a poll as well. So on episode 18, I had asked you guys, what do you think is coming next? Rep TV or TS11? And right now Rep TV is winning, but definitely go back and listen to episode 18 and scroll down, take a look at the poll and let me know what your guys' thoughts are. And don't forget to answer the question for today's episode. I want to wish you guys a very, very Merry Swiftmas. Thank you so much for spending these past 19 episodes with me. If you're new or just joining, welcome to the podcast. My name's Reagan. I am so, so lucky to have all of you here. It has been an enchanting time. As always, I will see you on the next one. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. I know all too well how busy life can be, and I am so grateful that you chose to stay. Now, just know this is me trying, and I would greatly appreciate if you took a minute to leave a review or maybe share this episode with a fellow Swiftie. Make sure you join my broadcast channel on Instagram for more Swiftivities. And long story short, this love is real, and I'm beyond grateful for your support. See you next time.